Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. James Dean walks down a drizzly street in Manhattan with his coat collar up against the wind and the rain. It's an iconic image, captured by photographer Dennis Stock. Stock's photographs of movie stars, jazz musicians, hippies, architecture, landscapes, and nature are such a part of the story of America in the 20th century that even if you've never heard his name, you have seen some of his work. Beyond Iconic is a documentary film about Dennis Stock, directed by Hannah Sovka. The film is screening this Sunday at 1:30 at Upstate Films in Woodstock, New York. Hannah Sovka will be at the screening for a Q&A following, and then musicians Terry Reuger and John Menegon, who scored the movie, will perform down the street at Center for Photography Woodstock. Hannah Sovka joins us now to talk about the film. Hannah, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you.
How did you discover the work of Dennis Stock?
Well, I initially discovered it actually abroad while I was studying film at the Polish National Film School in Łódź. That's written Lodz, but it's pronounced Łódź. One of my professors actually taught framing, often using examples of Dennis Stock's work. He was in general a big fan of Magnum photographers, and Dennis, I think, was one of his favorites. And they were excellent examples of what the professor was, you know, trying to convey, you know, to the students. And then, actually, I came home during an intersemester break during the winter, and my parents said that a friend of theirs was coming over with someone. And you know, the guests came over, and when I realized I was being introduced to Dennis Stock, I went kind of gaga.
I bet.
which I think Dennis appreciated, because people usually know his photography. I mean, most people have seen, like, the famous shot of James Dean walking in a rainy Times Square. But if you say the name Dennis Stock, they don't necessarily associate the name with the images. So I think Dennis was very happy that here was a young, relatively young person who knew his work and his name. And, of course, I was really honored and thrilled to meet him. And he was friends with my father, actually. My father, who passed away last year, was an artist. And they enjoyed having discussions about art. I enjoyed sometimes jumping in a little, although they were both very strong-minded guys.
Sure, yeah.
So it was a very personal connection, but also, you know, I had the opportunity to become familiar with his work before.
I couldn't believe as I was watching the film how many iconic images he's responsible for. Pictures you see of celebrities all the time. And he took them as, like, Humphrey Bogart and Marlon Brando and everybody, Katharine Hepburn. It was awesome.
Well, he also knew them personally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was like a... You know, they were friends. Like, he was best friends with James Dean, and he wasn't just jumping into their lives for a moment. He often was a part of their lives.
How did you approach him about making the film?
Well, a little bit sneakily, because first I thought I'd better show Dennis some of my earlier work, so he'll have some respect for me.
Sure. which seems hard to earn, because part of the film is showing him teaching a photography class at Omega, and he is very certain of what is right and what is wrong. So I understand you'd want to approach that, yeah, to make sure that you earned his respect.
Yes. So I showed him some work, and he liked it. And I mean, it's not something I also didn't realize right away, like, this is something I want to do. I mean, a film is a big commitment, mm-hmm. and you kind of live with it for a while. I spoke to him. Actually, the time I spoke to him, there was a specific thing that happened. Actually, he and my parents went to see the film on Leonard Cohen, and everybody was discussing, you know, whether they liked it or hated it. I mean, we all loved Cohen, but we all had kind of different feelings about the film itself. Uh-huh. And I just realized, wow, I don't think there's a film just on Dennis.
Right.
I knew there was a film on, like, his relationship with, with his friendship. Relationship sounds more complicated.
Friendship.
With James Dean, right. And, you know, the work he, you know, the amazing essay, you know, he did of photographs of the actor. However, there wasn't really a film that covered, you know, Dennis's work more broadly. And I actually was kind of surprised by that, and I thought, wow, there really should be such a film. And the other thing was that I really loved his uncompromising approach to photography and to art in general, and his, you know, kind of his ethics. So, you know, I talked to him, and I was actually surprised because he said yes during the first conversation about it. And then we proceeded to, you know, talk more about it, and I interviewed him initially as part of the research. And actually, it was a really, I mean, he was a tough guy, but as an artist, he gave me space, you know, he respected that, you know, to give me the space, like, you know, what I thought should, you know, be in the film and stuff like that. He was actually much more open about it than I expected.
Do you
I'm
have...
very grateful for that,
of
actually.
Course. Speaking of his openness, do you have a favorite of the stories that he told you that is in the film? I ask because I have a favorite, but I want to hear if you have a favorite first.
Oh, boy. You know, the particular, like, anecdotes, maybe not so much. I particularly enjoy some of the things he said that were kind of philosophical about photography, especially like reflecting on it as like a recording of reality and kind of a resistance of death, you know, like as the way he puts it, thumbing your nose at death. And I think that really spoke to me because I think it applies to many art forms and actually to kind of to an aspect of the human condition in general. So, but I'd love to hear what's your favorite.
My favorite, to qualify, the entire film is fascinating. He's a brilliant guy. He speaks so clearly and interestingly about the work, the amazing work he's done over his whole lifetime. But I loved the story about when he shot the Emperor of Ethiopia, when he went over and claimed to be on assignment from Time magazine, but wasn't, but got in anyway, got a lot of fantastic shots, and then sold it to Time when he got back. And he was so young when he did it. It's really gutsy and cool. He says, you know, you have to have a lot of chutzpah to do something like that, and he did.
That's true. That is, that's very also much reflective of his personality, which, I mean, it was just like, go out and get it. But at the same time, not in the way that, you know, especially nowadays you see exploitation, you know, and, you know, paparazzi. There was always, I think, in all of his work, a warmth and love of, you know, other human beings. So, yeah, he was a pushy guy, that's for sure. And it is a hilarious story. I couldn't believe it when he told it to me.
You include in the film, of course, many of his still images. How did you decide which ones you would use?
Well, I was very lucky that actually there was a period where Dennis was still healthy enough where we could discuss that.
Okay.
I mean, you know, after all, no one knew all the work better than Dennis.
Of course.
And that was really good because it gave me like a foundation that when he passed away, actually, during that process, we hadn't, you know, I hadn't created all those scenes yet. I hadn't, you know, worked out the rhythm and things like that.
Right.
He gave me, you know, he gave me enough guidance where I could build on that, you know, and complete the film. I mean, it wasn't the way I was expecting things would work out, but he gave me the compass in the beginning, and thank goodness, because really it is a lot of work, and to select, you know, like hundreds of images and to make it make sense. So he definitely gave me the guidance I needed, you know, to go on and finish the film. And actually, a year after he passed away, I was able to complete the film, you know, with everything, the 75-minute cut, because later on after the festivals, you know, I got an agent, and she said, well, you can do broadcast sales if you've got a 52-minute cut. So I actually recut the film for the broadcast version. So actually there were two stages of editing. The film that'll screen at Upstate Films will be the original 75-minute cut.
I think that it's really commendable to have, not that I'm a filmmaker or necessarily know exactly what I'm talking about, but to have included so many stills in a documentary film and have the stories still be so dynamic. I think that you are to be complimented on that achievement.
Oh, thank you. It was hard, I have to tell you.
Yeah, well, and the music helps.
Oh, the music's wonderful, and that's thanks to these wonderful musicians and composers who live right here in the Hudson Valley.
Yeah, they've been on the show before.
Yeah, Terry Roiger and John Menegon. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderfully creative process, actually, working with them. It was one of the best experiences I had working with composers. They just made such a variety, and you know, they were able to kind of go with a mood, you know, that would work with the photographs. It was, I mean, they're jazz musicians, so I guess in some way that's kind of what they do.
Right.
But yeah, that was a really wonderful thing. And I mean, it was regrettable that Dennis didn't get to hear the music, because I think he would have loved it. He was a big fan of jazz. I'm very confident in that if his ghost is floating around, he's happy about it.
The film is screening at Upstate Films in Woodstock on March 3rd. That's a Sunday at 1:30 p.m. And you will do a Q&A after the show. And then Terry and John will play down the street at the Center for Photography Woodstock. But for anybody who can't make it there, is there another way they can see it?
Yes. Fortunately, the film has educational distribution. That is, you know, for libraries and colleges and universities. So people can actually get a copy online. I mean, you get a copy with a license for public showings, and it's got a price that's associated with that, at filmmakerslibrary.com. And that's filmmakers with one M.
Okay, Filmmakers Library. Got it. Hannah, thank you very much for talking to me about the film, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. You too.
Hannah Sofka's documentary about photographer Dennis Stock is entitled Beyond Iconic. It will screen this Sunday at 1:30 at Upstate Films in Woodstock, New York. To learn more about the screening, visit upstatefilms.org.
We have no assurances of living at any time, but we're particularly sensitive to it from the age of 60 on. Can't do anything about it. You live one day at a time. Make peace with yourself, world, the best of your ability, and hope that the end isn't too much of a suffering experience. I think everybody would like to leave something behind. It's our only way of thumbing our noses at death. Society tends to resolve that problem with a headstone. That isn't what artists are meant to do. If the artist can produce a few images that have a timelessness, I just want to alleviate some of the suffering that we tend to go through as human beings by producing and leaving behind some beauty and some humor.
I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.